Thank you for listening to this sermon from Arapahoe Road Baptist Church. We hope you enjoy the teaching of Dr. David Rogers, lead pastor of Arapahoe Road. For more information about our church and its ministries, please visit arapahoeroad.org. And now, here's Pastor David Rogers.
I worked hard for power. Played the game well. Did all the necessary bidding. I compromised here and there, but only with the promise of the greater good on the other side. I earned my power. Jesus didn't seem to agree with me. The day he appeared before me, I felt pity for him at first glance. He's quiet, unassuming, unsettling to be around. He challenged my power. Privately, I might add, more than anyone ever had. Certainly, more than anyone whose life I held in my hands. He looked me right in the face and said, "You would not have any authority over me had it not been given you from up above." The crowd had charged him with a laundry list of crimes, and I had demanded that he tell me whether the charges were true, and the soldiers jeered at him for fun. And there he stood, the whole world against him. He felt no need to answer any of us. And that's when I knew this is what they were afraid of. What they were willing to turn the whole city upside down for. I saw the blood pool at his feet. His eye swelled closed. His lip split right there. Three days later, the tombs was empty. And my city filled up with an angry mob and believers. I don't call myself a believer, but I know this one thing to be true. There is not water enough in all the world to wash my hands clean of this.
It has been said that hindsight is 20/20. And while nobody in his or her right mind wants to go back and relive the deadly and the destructive year of 2020, there continues to be insights. There continues to be clarified understandings that come forth as we get a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more distance from last year and those actual events. And the same could be true for Pontius Pilate, the Roman governor, who experienced the events that surrounded that very first Easter. We're a week out now celebrating those events. But what might Pilate have been thinking? What could he have been thinking? What might he be thinking about that caused him to ruminate on those conversations, those poignant moments with Jesus for some time? While Pilate's decisions about Jesus, they certainly impacted that important weekend that we now just simply call Easter. And what Pilate encountered in the presence, in the words, in the actions of Jesus, they undoubtedly impacted him in some kind of way. And although historical inferences, that they don't trace back to Pilate believing, a believing faith in his life, his encounters with Jesus, they likely impacted him unlike any other that ever crossed that Roman governor's path or his judgment seat. Now, while most of Pilate's mentions in the Bible, they go back to the judgment, that trial, that crucifixion, even the burial of Jesus, there are other historical accounts in other parts of history that record Pilate, that record pictures of who this man was, what may have actually motivated Pilate to some of those recorded actions that we do have privy of looking into in the biblical records. Historians throughout the ages, they've cobbled together these credible pieces of information, and they give us a consensus on this man that was simply known as Pontius Pilate and how he was viewed. This governor of Rome, Pilate, he had a brutal, brutal reputation. He was a bloodthirsty man. He was a cruel man who showed little or no weakness and even less mercy. However, Pilate, he was smart. He was on the edge of overstepping his bounds with the person that he answered to, a man named Tiberius Caesar. Tiberius Caesar was the reigning emperor of Rome at this time. Tiberius, he wanted what all Roman emperors wanted once their power and their prestige was established throughout the empire. What they all wanted was peace. They all wanted peace. Pax Romana, the peace of Rome, especially while they ruled. And Pilate, in some of his harsh rule, Pilate, he caused the Jewish people over whom he was put in command to start rioting. I mean, we've experienced riots in our nation over this past year. Rioting is not something that started in 2020. It's been going on for centuries. And during Pilate's rule, he did some things that caused the Jewish people that he was over to start rioting, to start complaining in ways that resulted in those complaints going up the chain all the way up to Tiberius. And then Pilate got put on notice. If he couldn't keep the peace in appropriate ways, then he would just be removed and replaced with someone who could. He would be banished from his position of power, and his career would be shipwrecked on the rocks of his own ego-laden temper. He couldn't control his temper. And therefore, when Jesus was standing before Pilate on the eve of Passover, Pilate at that time was really walking a political tightrope. I mean, the last thing Pilate needed was another complaint from the Jewish mob to make its way back up the line to Tiberius. He didn't need that. In Matthew's gospel, his account in chapter 27, it records a very unique detail that's worth considering as we see this scene of Jesus before Pilate begin to unfold. Turn with me or turn on your Bible to Matthew chapter 27. Matthew 27, let's take a closer look together this morning. We're going to read a lot of the story of Jesus standing before Pilate to get the fullness of what was recorded. We'll toggle back from Matthew 27 and over into John's gospel in a few minutes in John chapter 18 and 19. But we'll start here in Matthew 27. We'll pick it up in verse 11 and go through verse 19. It says, "Now Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, 'Are you the king of the Jews?' Jesus said, 'You've said so.' But when he was accused by the chief priests and elders, he gave no answer. And then Pilate said to him, 'Do you not hear how many things they testify against you?' But he gave him no answer, not even to a single charge, so that the governor was greatly amazed. Now, at the feast of the governor was accustomed to release for the crowd any one prisoner whom they wanted. And they had then a notorious prisoner called Barabbas. So when they had gathered, Pilate said to them, 'Whom do you want me to release for you, Barabbas or Jesus, who is called Christ?' For he knew that it was out of envy that they had delivered him up. Besides, while he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent word to him, 'Have nothing to do with that righteous man, for I have suffered much because of him today in a dream.'" This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So Pilate was amazed at how he perceived Jesus to carry himself in such a literal life and death moment in time. Now, only Matthew records the detail that Pilate's wife had such a disturbing dream about Jesus that she interrupted Pilate while Pilate was conducting official Roman business. Notice again that really important detail from verse 19. While he, Pilate, was sitting on the judgment seat. You might want to underline that phrase. While sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent word to him, "Have nothing to do with that righteous man, for I have suffered much because of him today in a dream." This phrase here, sitting on the judgment seat, that tells us more than simply Pilate's posture and his location at the moment. That phrase lets us know Jesus' trial officially was underway. You go, well, what's the big deal about that? The big deal about that is that they were on the record. They were on the record. They weren't in a moment of legal recess. And for Pilate's wife to send word to him in a way that interrupted Pilate in this moment is a detail that lets us know what a monumental impact that dream about Jesus must have had on Pilate's wife. It was a huge thing. You know, why was it a huge thing? Because if you understand the culture of the Roman people, if you understood who they were, what made them tick, Romans were known to be people who were superstitious. Dreams meant something to this group of people from the Roman culture. I mean, we kind of understand superstitions a little bit. I mean, if you're a basketball fan and your basketball team's leading in the national championship at halftime, like mine was last weekend, man, I was sitting in a particular place. That meant I had to continue sitting in that particular place until the run was over. And I sat in the same place all game long until the Bears hoisted that trophy. I was like, I'm not going to be the one to mess this thing up. And nobody else can move, okay? So Allison, you're there. Jack, you're there. Lucy, you're there. Everybody had to stay. Why? Because we didn't want to mess it up. I mean, I didn't really think that, but I mean, you never know. Wasn't going to be on my watch. Wasn't going to be because of my... That's the Romans. That's a Roman mindset. Very superstitious. Romans were the kind of people who were... usually they were very, very inclusive when it came to appeasing any kind of God, any kind type or people that even went beyond Rome. I mean, they didn't want to mess anything up. From a Roman's perspective, they lived life on the supernatural plane, covering their bases. They took that better safe than sorry kind of approach to all things concerning the gods and the mystical and the holy and whatever was deemed in that day as sacred. Roman people, they paid attention to signs and wonders and omens that might point to any possible areas of being susceptible or something that might cause defeat or that could lead them to victory. This cultural characteristic of the Romans, coupled in with Pilate's internal tension that he felt politically from Tiberius, whom he answered to, it likely stressed Pilate's desire to tread very lightly and cautiously with this particular problem at hand. Pilate wanted to handle this situation before him without inciting a religious riot in the middle of Passover while not stepping in the proverbial bear trap that could snap shut not only on his political career, but on his comforts. He and his wife enjoyed living in the lap of luxury of that day. He had a comfortable status in life. He had to be careful with Jesus and the complaints that were levied against him by the Jews. I mean, Pilate, he had a good thing going for him. Pilate had a good thing going for him in his life. I mean, just look at him here depicted in this picture. Probably didn't wear a tie and suspenders, but nonetheless, he was a person of power in his own day. The end of a long day, man, he didn't want to do anything to mess things up, because think about it. I mean, vocationally, he was on the track to higher and higher success, higher and higher power and prestige, and subsequently his standard of living and the luxuries that he and his wife experienced were something that they had both grown accustomed to. They weren't interested in forfeiting their lifestyle, if at all possible. Pilate didn't want to do anything to rock the boat when it came to his social, his financial, or his political status. And the last thing that Pilate needed was another complaint from the Jewish mob to make its way up the line to Tiberius, his boss. And now his wife is interrupting his courtroom to tell him something that he already knew. What did she say? Have nothing to do with that righteous man. I mean, Pilate and his wife, think about it. They likely were very aware of and quite intrigued by Jesus and his reputation. I mean, it's not out of the question that Pilate and his wife had multiple conversations about Jesus that very week and the events that had surrounded him since he entered into Jerusalem that week. Jerusalem and the nearby countryside, it had been buzzing about the news of Jesus' miraculous healings and feedings and teachings that had the whole region talking about Jesus. Jesus was trending big time. Jesus and thousands of other Jews, they had traveled to Jerusalem to celebrate a festival, to celebrate Passover. And Pilate likely knew of the parade, the triumphal entry that took place as the people were shouting, "Hosanna, Hosanna," at this one named Jesus from that little village of Nazareth. And now, the one that Pilate had heard so much about was standing in his midst. And while Pilate likely wanted to distance himself from the whole scene, he was amazed at Jesus. He was intrigued by Jesus. It was like a tractor beam that just pulled him in. Now, while Pilate may not have believed in Jesus, he did believe that there was something unique about this one who claimed to be a king of a different kind of kingdom. Now, John's gospel, turn over to John with me in John chapter 18. John's gospel shares this perspective that allows for a little bit more of the dialogue between Jesus and Pilate to transpire that the governor likely did not soon forget. It would lead to a decision that the world would be forced to remember from that day forward, so much so that we did remember it again this past weekend, and it's certainly appropriate to remember it again this weekend and every weekend forward. The scene is described in John chapter 18. We'll begin in verse 33, and we're just going to read through this section of Jesus's encounter with Pilate. We'll go all the way through chapter 19, verse 16. So several verses here, but we need to remember the words that were spoken, these moments that Pilate and Jesus had before one another. John 18, beginning in verse 33. Get over there. There we go. So Pilate entered his headquarters again and called Jesus and said to him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And Jesus answered, "Do you say this of your own accord, or did others say it to you about me?" And Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. But my kingdom is not from the world." Then Pilate said to him, "So you are a king." Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" After he had said this, he went back outside to the Jews and told them, "I find no guilt in him. But you have a custom that I should release one man for you at the Passover. So do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews?" And they cried out again, "Not this man, but Barabbas." Now Barabbas was a robber. Then Pilate took Jesus and flogged him, and the soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head and arrayed him in a purple robe. And they came up to him saying, "Hail, King of the Jews!" And they struck him with their hands. And Pilate went out again and said to them, "See, I'm bringing him out to you that you may know that I find no guilt in him." So Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. And Pilate said to them, "Behold, the man. When the chief priests and the officers saw him, they cried out, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" And Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves and crucify him, for I find no guilt in him." And the Jews answered him, "We have a law, and according to that law, he ought to die because he's made himself the Son of God." When Pilate heard this statement, he was even more afraid. He entered his headquarters again. He said to Jesus, "Where are you from?" But Jesus gave him no answer. So Pilate said to him, "Will you not speak to me? Do you know that I have the authority to release you and authority to crucify you?" Jesus answered him, "You would have no authority over me at all unless it had been given you from above. Therefore, he who delivered me over to you has the greater sin." And from then on, Pilate sought to release him. But the Jews cried out, "If you release this man, you are not Caesar's friend. Everyone who makes himself a king opposes Caesar." So when Pilate heard these words, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judgment seat at the place called the stone pavement, and in Aramaic, Gabbatha. Now it was the day of preparation of the Passover. It was about the sixth hour. He said to the Jews, "Behold, your king." And they cried out, "Away with him! Away with him! Crucify him!" And Pilate said to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" And the chief priest answered, "We have no king but Caesar." So he delivered him over to them to be crucified. Pilate had heard the complaints, and he was not the slightest bit concerned that Jesus posed a real problem, a real rebellious threat to Rome. I mean, multiple times in the gospel accounts, Pilate tried to acquit Jesus and send him and send the crowds away. Just move on. Get on with your life. Let me do the same. Pilate just wanted peace. He just wanted peace. And yet the Jewish religious leaders were relentless. You ever seen anybody be relentless? Be outraged on social media? And they just keep on and keep on and keep on and keep on and keep on. That's what was happening here. They wanted to cancel Jesus. Cancel culture's been around a lot longer than 2020. There's nothing new under the sun. They wanted Jesus gone. And yet, no matter how badly Pilate tried to distance from Jesus and just do what his wife wanted him to do. I mean, Claudia suggested, just don't have anything to do with him. And yet Pilate, he had to respond once these angry Jews said what they said in John chapter 19, verse 12. Do you remember what he said? They said, "If you release this man, you're not Caesar's friend. Everyone who makes himself a king opposes Caesar." What happened right there was checkmate. His hand had been forced. Caesar had been called on. And now Pilate, he's got to make a move. He had to decide as he weighed truth and acquittal of Jesus in one hand and politics leading to peace with the Jews and ultimately his supervisor on the other hand. And he chose the latter. while demonstrating a desire to appear. How many people do something to appear some way to somebody else? Appear like he's still trying to distance from the decision and have nothing to do with this righteous man. Matthew 27, verses 24 to 26. Flip back over to Matthew. Look at this. Matthew 27, 24 to 26. Record what Pilate did and said next. So when Pilate saw that he was gaining nothing, if you ever see you're gaining nothing, be careful. That's when you must live by principle. When you see you're gaining nothing, will you still be a person of conviction? Or will you wet your finger and see which way the political winds are blowing? So when Pilate saw that he was gaining nothing, but rather that a riot was beginning, he took water and he washed his hands before the crowd, saying, "I am innocent of this man's blood. See to it yourselves." And all the people answered, "His blood be on us and on our children." Then he released for them Barabbas, and having scourged Jesus, delivered him to be crucified. Friends, within the hour, Jesus would be on the cross. Within the hour. Within 6 hours, Jesus would cry out and give up his spirit in death. Before sundown, another request would be made of our friend Pilate concerning Jesus. Again, Matthew 27, verses 57 to 60, records the moment between Pilate and a man named Joseph. What a day for Pilate. This guy can't get to 5 o'clock. Verse 57, when it was evening, there came a rich man from Arimathea. Oh, great, a rich man. His name was Joseph, who also was a disciple of Jesus. And he went to Pilate and he asked for the body of Jesus. Okay? Then Pilate ordered it to be given to him. And Joseph took the body and wrapped it in a clean linen shroud and laid it in his own new tomb, which he had cut in the rock. And he rolled a great stone to the entrance of the tomb and he went away. Now, perhaps Pilate thought that this act of permission granted to Joseph of Arimathea finally might lead to some peace that Pilate had longed over for the lengthy period from disturbance all the way to Jesus' death. Whew, Pilate can take a breath, right? Pilate exhaling, perhaps ready to pour himself a drink to just cap the frenzied day. Nope. One more strategic decision would still be summoned from Pilate. Matthew concludes this marathon couple of days. End of one day, beginning of the next day. Look at the end of Matthew 27, verses 62 to 66. The next day, that is, after the day of preparation, the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered before Pilate. Oh, great, here they are again. Serenity now. Verse 63, they said, "Sir, we remember how that impostor said, while he was still alive, 'After 3 days I will rise.' Therefore, order the tomb to be made secure until the third day, lest his disciples go and steal him away and tell the people he's risen from the dead, and the last fraud will be worse than the first." And Pilate said to them, "You have a guard of soldiers. Go make it as secure as you can." So they went and they made the tomb secure by sealing the stone and setting a guard. Now, that decision right there, that decision took place on the Saturday, following the death of Jesus, what's become known as what? Good Friday. But as Pilate and the whole world soon would find out. Say that one with me. Sunday's coming. That's what gives us hope today, yes? Sunday's coming. It doesn't matter how political things get. Sunday's coming. It doesn't matter how bad Good Friday was. Sunday's coming. It doesn't matter what kind of behind-the-scenes manipulation takes place on Saturday, the Sabbath day. I thought the Jews were supposed to be off their feet. What are they doing before Pilate? Some people will go to extreme to get their way, yes? To keep their narrative in the way that they want it, yes? Friday, Saturday, doesn't matter. Sunday's coming. Sunday's coming. The guard of soldiers trying to secure the tomb of Jesus soon scattered when the time came. There is a time appointed, men and women. There's a time appointed. There was a time appointed for Jesus to die. There was a time appointed for him to come back to life. That time came. And there was nothing that anyone could do. Jesus conquered death. The stone was rolled away. Those soldiers, they scattered in fear, in disbelief of what they had just experienced regarding the power of God. God's angels were on call that morning. They were ready to respond at the direction of the Almighty Creator of heaven and earth. And news of the now empty tomb, it gets back to Pilate. Oh no. It's a Bloody Mary Sunday morning for Pilate. He's pouring himself another drink. Maybe another drink. And one after that. And he may have just been sitting there just pondering all that had happened. Amazed at what Jesus, the King of the Jews, did when he stood before him, knowing something in that moment that all of Rome could not have comprehended. The Prince of Peace, he did what he came to do. And what did he come to do? He came to conquer sin and death and the cross and the grave. And when he walked out of the grave, he began to show himself to people. Ultimately, he would show himself to hundreds of people. Hundreds of people. As the resurrection then would lead to many people following him and being known as believers. Would you say this word with me on three? One, two, three. Believers. Now, we don't know if Pilate was one. But we do know this, there are billions since that moment who would identify as a believer. In our culture today, apparently we can identify as all kinds of things. Who do you identify as when it comes to being a believer or not? Man, I'll identify with that. However, Pilate, his status of belief, it does still remain uncertain. History books do not note emphatically about what Pilate did or did not ultimately believe about Jesus. Regardless, a person simply cannot back away from that table and walk away and just kind of wash his or her hands and then just move on with life without coming to resolution about what one believes concerning Jesus. And so in that regard, we're all in the same boat as our friend Pilate this morning. Not to decide is to decide. Delaying a decision is fine for a moment, but not for eternity. Jesus told Pilate when he stood before him on that Good Friday morning in John 18, 37 to 38, "You say that I am a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice. That was true then, that's true today, that will be true throughout eternity. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice. And Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" Friends, Pilate's eternity hung in the balance based upon how he answered that question. And you know what? So does the fate of all people. All people's fate hang in that balance of how each individual answers that question. What is truth? And Jesus just goes ahead and gives us the answer. In case we're stuck on that star test question, what is truth? Jesus goes ahead and makes sure that whosoever will knows the answer. Earlier on in John chapter 14, he's having a conversation and he just lays it out. In John 14 verses 6 and 7, Jesus says, "I am the way and the truth and the life. And no one comes to the Father except through me. If you had known me, you'd have known my Father also. And from now on, you do know him and have seen him." And we talked about this a little bit last week. If seeing is believing, well then hopefully our friend Pilate came to grips with what he honestly believed about Jesus when he sat back, when he reflected on his time, seeing Jesus face to face, hearing the words that Jesus spoke directly to his ears. And for Pilate, as with all people, only God knows what Pilate genuinely believed in his heart about Jesus. And the same's true for you, and the same's true for me. And after Jesus' resurrection, before he would ascend to the Father in heaven, Jesus had this to say about seeing and believing. We focused on it last week in John 20. Let me bring it back to us this week. John 20 says this, verse 29. Jesus asks, "Have you believed because you've seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." What did Pilate believe about Jesus? More importantly, what do you believe about Jesus? May we not wash our hands of this question. May we come to understand and to live what we truly do believe about this one who amazed Pilate. Jesus Christ, the Son of God.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. Feel free to distribute this recording, but please do not sell or alter it in any way. For more information about Arapahoe Road Baptist Church, please visit our website at arapahoeroad.org. Arapahoe Road Baptist Church is located at 2256 Arapahoe Road in Garland, Texas, with Sunday morning worship service at 10:45 a.m. We hope you'll join us this week.